Scholars Movie News, your weekly source for film headlines, previews, and reviews, all in glorious podcast form. I'm Fox.
And I'm Jill. And with us, as always, we have fellow Geek Scholars Chris.
Hey there, everybody.
And Lauren.
Hi, guys. Welcome to episode 109. Right now, the entertainment cycle primarily belongs to the small screen rather than the big. Many studios are gearing up their marketing machines for award season runs, and audiences were just inundated with the all-new fall 2013 TV lineup. Now, usually we don't cover television on Geek Scholars Movie News for obvious reasons, but I think one show kind of warrants an exception, and that's Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Mm.
I say this because the show, at least so far, is a direct continuation of the recent Marvel films, so I thought we'd check in with our thoughts on the show so far. I also want to check in on American Hustle, a probable Oscar contender starring Christian Bale, Bradley Cooper, Jennifer Lawrence, and more, and that just released a new trailer. And Fox got to screen Tom Hanks' Captain Phillips, so we'll hear from him about that.
But first,
we'll begin with some other comic book movie news. Way back in December 2012, we broke the news that a reboot of The Fantastic Four was in the works. Well, now Josh Trank is set to direct, and Trank gained notice with his first film, Chronicle, which was a found footage style film about three high schoolers who obtained superpowers and the dramatic consequences. The other thing we know is The Fantastic Four will hit theaters in 2015 on March 6th. Now, in December, we even went so far as to do a mini casting challenge on this, but let's do a quick reminder of who the Fantastic Four are. Chris?
Sure. So they are ostensibly astronauts who encounter some incident in space which grants them superpowers. The four of them are Dr. Reed Richards, who is Mr. Fantastic. His power is that he stretches all of his arms and limbs. Sue Storm, who eventually becomes his love interest, the Invisible Woman, and she can go invisible. She has some force field powers. Johnny Storm, who is Sue Storm's younger brother, he's the Human Torch, and he can fly, and he's made of fire. He's also Captain America, but that's another story for another day. Ben Grimm is the Thing, and his deal is that he's strong and basically made of rock.
Yeah. And he's and kind orange. Of an old college buddy of Reed Richards, isn't he, Chris?
That's right. That's exactly right.
And this won't be the first time we see the Fantastic Four on screen, will it, Fox?
No, it will not be. In fact, we've seen the Fantastic Four twice on the screen previously. Once in 2005, or I should say the first time in 2005. Although it didn't do that well with critics. It only did 26% positive. Although it did great at the box office. It had a budget of only $100 million. It made back $330 million worldwide.
Wow.
Now, to be fair, over half of that was international. So only $154 million of that was in the U.S.
Huh.
So, of course, they had to make a sequel, which was the Fantastic Four Rise of the Silver Surfer. Lawrence Fishburne did the voice of the Silver Surfer, which was a little bit weird. Again, though, it didn't do very well with critics, 37% positive, but it still made a ton of money, $289 million.
Wow.
So you can see why 20th Century Fox, who owns this property, wants to make more of these.
People are interested in seeing it.
Well, clearly. I mean, it's a fun idea. It's basically like The Incredibles. Like, if you heard what Chris's descriptions were.
Elastigirl.
Right. It's basically Reed Richards. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, let's get to the reason we're even discussing this. So last December, when we were musing about casting, you all went with some pretty accomplished people like Elizabeth Banks, Ryan Gosling, John Hamm.
That's right.
But we know now a few people have actually begun reading for roles, and it sounds like the producers are going much younger.
Interesting.
So let's start with Reed Richards, Mr. Fantastic. Among the names we're hearing are Kit Harington, who is Jon Snow on Game of Thrones, and Miles Teller, who just showed up as Sutter Keeley in The Spectacular Now and will play Peter in 2014's Divergent. Anyone have thoughts on these?
That is pretty young. Yeah, we're talking established astronauts here, particularly Reed Richards is the head of the expedition.
You know, I have to say, Chris, I know more of Kit Harington's work, I think, from Game of Thrones.
Sure.
And thinking of him as Jon Snow, I don't know that I see astrophysicist or super geeky or super nerdy.
No.
And that kind of worries me that they're trying to do this beautification of Reed Richards when he's not that way. He's a little bit more of an everyman geek. And that's what I think is interesting about him.
Yeah.
Well, Miles Teller, I think, could play a little bit more of the everyman.
I agree.
And in The Spectacular Now, his most recent picture, he plays really young, but he's not actually high school aged. Almost, but not quite. So maybe he's a better pick there. What do you think, Jill?
You know, they're both exactly the same age. They're both 26. And I thought, man, how could he get his doctorate and, like you say, become an established astronaut, Chris? But he was so smart. Like, he finished his third or fourth PhD when he was, like, 20. I mean...
Of course he did.
He really went through it. The thing that's going to make it tricky, I think, is that everyone else is way younger than he is.
Oh, yeah. So I think, he's got the little gray in his hair. Yeah. Like, they make him older in the comic books.
I think the sort of revised canon is that Sue Storm is 6 years younger than him. Originally, she was like 12 years younger than him or something, but that makes her really young and her younger brother even younger.
So yeah.
That, I think, is a little bit goofy.
They're going to potty train Johnny during the movie. It's going to be really cute.
Maybe it's going to be pre-superhero powers. We're going to see them.
Maybe an origin story. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Chris's favorite.
Maybe
they're
just going to ignore canon and do whatever they want with the movie. That's always maybe possible, exactly. Possible as well.
Too. And before we go forward, I think this raises an interesting point. I think that 20th Century Fox, who owns also the X-Men properties, just saw how well First Class did. And what First Class was a younger version of all these superheroes. Mm-hmm. Like, look how great that did. Let's do that again. And I think that's a mistake for this case. Chris, you're all the time saying that origin stories are not really necessary anymore. Even if people don't know how these characters got their superpowers, I'm not quite certain that Fantastic Four needs to completely reset everything and teach people about their origin stories. I think you should just dive into this headstrong, but it doesn't look like that's going to be the way they're going.
Yeah.
If we sort of talk about where these guys came from, the Fantastic Four, what they came out of, this was a Stan Lee, Jack Kirby creation. It was a direct response to Justice League of America, which was a big superhero team for DC at the time. Uh-huh. They really wanted their own team of superheroes. But Stan Lee especially says he was going through some stuff and was sort of really bored with sort of the classic superhero personas. And he just wanted to write a story that he thought was interesting. So from the beginning, these are characters who were flawed, who had really petty conflicts and jealousies with each other and were a lot more human than a lot of superheroes of that era.
Yeah.
Exactly. So this would be kind of an interesting thing. If maybe it was a pre-origin story, we're seeing where these people came from, and maybe the last scene is them going up into space. I think that might be an interesting way to take it.
Yeah, maybe.
It's not the way they'll take it.
But no, it's not the way they'll take it.
That's not what will happen.
No superpowers until the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, are you crazy?
No, that will never happen. But just to round out the casting rumors that we're hearing potentially Saoirse Ronan for Sue Storm. She popped up in Atonement, but also had prominent roles in Hannah, The Lovely Bones, and most recently The Host. Or potentially Kate Mara, who's been playing Zoe Barnes in Netflix House of Cards. We're looking at The Thing, and we don't have much for that. The Human Torch, I've repeatedly heard Michael B. Jordan might be the pick to play that. He was just in Fruitvale Station, an incredible actor. So, yeah, that scrambles up our age range a little bit even more, and, all still safely in rumor territory. But one last little bit. We've heard rumblings that the Fantastic Four universe might intersect with the X-Men movie universe. Do you think that's going to happen? Fox?
Yes, but in a very, very tangential, quick blink and you'll miss it kind of way, at least to start. I mean, even though both of these properties are owned by 20th Century Fox now, Marvel still has some creative licensing over all this. And I just don't see even the teams within a big studio playing nice together enough to have their characters interact. I think it's a great idea. I'm still skeptical they're actually going to make it happen.
I don't know that it is a great idea, to be perfectly honest.
Maybe not.
There are so many X-Men, and here are four new characters. I feel like it can get a little confusing for people who aren't super familiar with these two franchises, starting to mix these big groups of people when not everybody is even sure who all the X-Men are at this point. People are still getting to learn.
They kind of change
who
a
the
little
fan.
Bit.
Yeah, I mean, every X-Men movie, they pick slightly different X-Men. And if you're not paying attention, it gets a little bit confusing, I think, for folks.
I want to be explicit here that this is being done by 20th Century Fox, not Marvel. This is not going to tie into sort of the larger Marvel universe.
The Avengers kind of thing, yeah.
Exactly right. So, you know, we're talking a lot of big names here, particularly in talks for this, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if they've got to tone down their hopes just a little bit. I don't know that Michael B. Jordan is going to sign on for just another superhero movie.
Huh.
And so far, you know, this is not Marvel caliber stuff. You're not getting the absolute best actors, I don't think.
All right. Well, let's move to television and Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. The show picks up, it seems like, about a year, maybe two, after the events in The Avengers, and focuses on Clark Gregg reprising his role as Agent Phil Coulson.
He's alive!
He's alive! We're not sure. Coulson puts together a team of human agents to investigate strange occurrences and phenomena all around the globe. Now, let's try our best not to spoil too much about what's been happening here. but he is seemingly sort of alive, maybe. but there's been 3 episodes at the time of this recording, so what do we think of it so far?
I'm into it. I want to watch it because I have to support everything that Joss Whedon does, and I think there's a lot of good heart and soul in this, and I think there's a lot of good ideas, but I have to be honest that I don't find the same level of depth and characterization that I found in almost all of the Phase 1 Marvel movies and Phase 2, now Iron Man 3. And I'm a little disappointed in that. I don't know that I connect with these characters the same way I connected with the superheroes I've been introduced to thus far.
I'm right there with you, Fox. I want to like this show so badly.
Sure.
And I actually thought the pilot was really strong. Mm-hmm. But I feel like what they need to do is they've got some interesting short stories that they're telling each episode, but there's no long-term, overarching, interesting thing to just draw you in and make you want to come back. I feel like I could not watch it for a month and not be all that sorry and maybe want to go back and see the episodes again, but there's not anything really tying it all together. Mm. That's what I'm really missing.
I feel exactly the same way. The pilot was super, super strong, and they just are spinning their wheels a little bit on the initiation, trying to figure out where to go and which direction to take it. And they need plot arc, and they need character development, like now.
One thing Joss Whedon has said before is that the first 6 episodes of any series are the pilot. You see a pilot, and then another pilot, and then another pilot, and another pilot, until you feel like you have your audience established firmly enough in what's going on here that you can really take it to new places. That said, I don't know if they're going to keep a huge audience if they keep doing these sort of Monster of the Week one-off things, because they're opening up these huge questions and really interesting things, and they're just not exploring it enough, and that worries me quite a bit.
The one thing that I was a little bit hopeful of this past episode was that they seemed to introduce a villain, a sort of big Marvel villain that one hopes will be a recurring character and bring some of that depth to the show.
We talk a lot about arc, and I think they're leaning very heavily on Clark Gregg. And I actually think he's doing a very great job, but he can't be in every scene. Yeah. Right. He can't deliver every piece of dialogue. I mean, even though we would probably love that. But I have to say, like, he seems like he's in a different show. Like, and maybe it's because he brings to this, you know, his experience of having been in all the other Marvel movies, both as an actor and as a character. But I just consistently get the feeling that he's in a much more serious position than everyone else around him. They're kind of doing this for fun.
It is kind of weird, and I worry that's just that he feels like he has a strong indication of what the character's supposed to be because he's done it in the movies, and the other people are not on the same page about exactly how this is supposed to be. And it is interesting to say this is the first time we've seen ostensibly a Joss Whedon show not sort of reach into all of his favorite actors and sort of pull any of those into this show.
Yeah, that's funny. I think there is a duality there between this is supposed to be a brand new team, and they kind of suck and don't have their act together yet as a team, and maybe that's also true in reality behind the scenes with actors that Joss has never worked with before. Yeah.
None of them are good at their jobs.
No.
I mean, I just feel like Clark Gregg should be able to assemble this amazing team of, you know, of agents, and instead he gets this group of misfits who doesn't know what the heck they're doing.
It's almost disconcerting. And
you have to teach her to fight?
Like, I think that's maybe the premise of the show is he's building a master team from the ground up.
It's the Bad News Bears.
it is the Bad News Bears. But I mean, that's the best our government has to offer in terms of espionage. I mean, like, I don't know. Like, it makes you wonder how they got anything done ever, if this is the best of what they, I don't know. But I'm with you,
I'll keep watching. How about you guys?
I will keep watching, but mostly for Clark Gregg, mostly because I think he's really fun in the role. He consistently makes me laugh and makes me interested in what his limitations are. And we don't know exactly what the backstory is with his quote unquote death.
And for the reason that you said, Chris, this show deserves a half a season chance. Yep. Like, we should watch it until Christmas and see what happens.
According to Whedon, they've still got half the pilot left. So
That's right.
Yeah, this show hasn't even come close to losing me yet. I'm curious to see where it goes. But I want to do a preview review now for American Hustle. But before we review the footage we've seen, I think this project warrants a discussion of what this film is actually about and the talent that's involved. Fox?
Well, I'll start with the talent. It's being written and directed by, well, I should say half written by David O. Russell. And he's the person behind Silver Linings Playbook, which is why he had the opportunity to pull in much of the talent that was in that movie. I'm talking about Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Lawrence, along with people like Christian Bale, Amy Adams, Jeremy Renner. I mean, there's a really just this wonderful team of acting ability that's jumping into this.
And what do we know about the actual story, Jill?
Yeah, so people for a long time were calling this project David O. Russell's Abscam movie. And Abscam is basically an FBI operation trying to catch corrupt political officials. What it seems like they're doing here is using that as inspiration. So there's a lot that we know about the actual story, which I think will really spoil the movie. So I'm not going to go into it in real depth, but it's an FBI sting to catch politicians, essentially. And what they've clearly done, they've just sort of used those people as inspiration.
And when did all this take place? We think sort of in the late 70s. It's definitely got that 70s, early 80s vibe.
It certainly looks that way from the trailer.
Right, exactly.
For sure, yeah.
But speaking of, there have been two trailers for this film so far. What do you think of them, Chris? Especially since each trailer had a very different style, I'd say.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, it's sort of becoming the norm now that you see different trailers marketed to different audiences, and it may be the sort of targeting what movies they're putting these trailers in front of for who they think is likely to be seeing them. One of them takes a sort of very stylized approach to what this movie is all about, and you do get that this is super, super 70s, and everybody is just in plaid and gross looking.
Bradley
and
Cooper
horrible.
In a perm.
Exactly.
Oh,
right, yeah.
The rollers. He rolls his
hair. It's great.
Yeah. And the other one is a much more classic sort of heist setup kind of trailer. We're seeing each of these characters introduced individually. We see we get a little sense of what their backstory is, and at the end, they're all sort of thrown together. So a couple of different ways of approaching this.
No, it's funny because I liked having both of them. I think the first trailer was sort of a teaser, but it was like very fun and happy, upbeat music. People are dancing around or making sort of jokes at one another, being sarcastic. In the second trailer, you have this sort of quiet piano and you have these different inspections into these characters. One person hustles for respect, one hustles for money. And you have this, again, introduction to these very deep characters I think David O. Russell has developed. So I think I like combining the two. I like the idea that there's some deep drama and also some fun on top of it.
You know, I found the second one to be more serious, like you said, but I really found it to be tongue-in-cheek serious.
Maybe.
I mean, how can you take these characters seriously?
There's
you
so
can.
Many V-necks and chest hair and long chains.
I was just ridiculous in the best possible way.
So nobody took anybody seriously in the 70s? That's what we're saying. Maybe that's true. So I want to know from each of you, which is your preferred trailer of the two approaches? Do you like the slick, fun heist movie, or do you like the darker, thinkier, more dramatic piece?
40 years from now, nobody's going to take us seriously either, I'm fairly sure.
Well, I mean, very few people take us seriously now, so.
I feel kind of ashamed to admit it because I think the second trailer is the better trailer, but if you ask me to rewatch one.
No, I know which one you like better.
I mean, the fun one. Of course I did.
Fun
I like
one,
them
obviously.
Dancing and like, you know, trying to pull off the heist and thinking that they're on top of the world.
Give
I like
Fox
that.
A slick heist movie any day.
It's the confidence. The first trailer had so much confidence and bravado in it. Couldn't help but love it.
What about you, Joe?
I like the second trailer. I think because I like the way that they ask the questions, you know.
Yep.
And I did find it very tongue-in-cheek, which I enjoyed.
Too, which you like, yeah. I know, yeah.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think there was a female narrator, like a voiceover in the second trailer that gave you a lot more of the big picture and what the movie's actually going to try to be about, which I found super helpful because the first one was fun. But at the end, I'm like,
what is it about?
I'm not real clear of what's going on there. But the second one was I get it now. Okay. So that was my preference. What about you, Chris?
I totally agree. I think the first one was almost like a sizzle reel. And that was really fun to sort of get in the sense, get in the tone, get in the feel for what this thing is all about. But I do want to know more about what the plot actually is here. What's the plan? Who are these guys? How do they get dragged into it? So I can't wait to see more.
Okay, so real quick, everyone throw in a grade for your preferred trailer.
It's an absolute A for me. I can't wait to see more of this. Sold me.
Yeah, ditto for me. I would say A, and I actually would give my lesser preferred trailer also an A. I mean, I thought they were both great.
Both pretty solid, yeah. I would go B+ on the one with the voiceover.
Yeah, I'll go A-.
All right. Well, American Hustle gets a limited release on December 13th, but should go wide on December 25th. And real quick, as a last aside, do we think this looks like a contender for some awards? Yes or no?
Absolutely, yes. I think mostly in the acting categories, especially in the female acting categories. I don't think there's anyone else who's going to rival Amy Adams and Jennifer Lawrence again in these categories. I think they have almost instant nominations.
It has that automatic award contender prerequisite, which is actresses without makeup on. So so there's that.
And V-necks, right? No, sorry.
All right. The biggest movie to hit theaters this weekend was Captain Phillips, the true story of an American cargo freighter that was attacked by Somali pirates in 2011. Tom Hanks stars as a lead character, and Fox got to see it.
Yes, it did.
Fox, you weren't all that excited about this film, so what did you like about it? What surprised you?
I will admit, I was not that excited about this. I will tell you what surprised me the most was the Somalian aspect. First of all, the actors that they got to play the Somalian pirates had incredible depth and had this wide range of emotions from panic to passion to love. And they actually told a lot of the story from their perspective. We start out in Somalia and we start out riding along with them in these little boats and getting their orders from the higher ups and basically doing it so their families don't starve. And so it gave you a little bit of an inspiration into why these activities came about.
It wasn't so one-sided.
It wasn't.
As probably we've
heard. Yeah, it seems like it could have easily been two-dimensional bad guys, you know, and
that,
move on.
That's very true. And then on top of that, what I think surprised me in a wonderful way was the historical accuracy. I did a little bit of research about the real Captain Richard Phillips and what he went through. And from what I can tell is they captured pretty much everything that happened in this movie. It's hard to condense several days into 2 hours, but I thought that they did a really good job of making me feel like I was with this captain and feeling what he felt. And given what I know of what actually happened, I thought they translated it rather well.
So how do you think Hanks did? Is this his return to form that we're hoping for?
Yes, it's a great question, and it absolutely is. Tom Hanks disappears into this character, and he is believable as a commander of this boat. He's believable as a strategist, and there was a lot more of that cat and mouse than I thought there would be when the pirates board the ship. And he's believable as a rational, sane person who doesn't try to act out and be the hero when he knows he can't be. He knows when he needs to play into his captor's hands, and he also knows when to take advantage of the situation when a window of opportunity presents itself.
Of course he does. He's Tom Hanks.
Exactly.
So what are the downsides? What fell short in your opinion?
There's very little to criticize here, and that's a great thing. I think that, you know, if I was a film student, I may say, well, here and there, you could edit it a little bit more. There are some sequences, especially when he's a captor on his lifeboat, that run a little long that maybe you could trim down even further. But I understand why they didn't do that. To build up tension. The ending comes a little quickly. I would love a little bit more information about what happened to all the people. They do give you a very clear ending. They do tell you what happens to all the individuals involved in the situation. But it does come, it felt a little abrupt. And so if I was going to change anything, I maybe smooth that out.
All right. Well, if you had to give it a grade, what'd you say?
It's an absolute A, and I didn't think I would say that going in. I wasn't really excited, but I have to say the trailers hid a lot of the greater story here. They hide a lot of the great performances, a lot of the great twists that I think that would be appealing to marketers to show and to reveal to lure people into the theaters. Mm-hmm. But I think that there's a lot of hidden wonderfulness in the performances and what happens that will engage a lot of people who go see this. So I highly recommend it.
Awesome.
Yeah, sounds great. Well, next up is this week's trivia question, which comes to us from Jill. What do you have for us, Jill?
All right. So we have been talking a lot about Stephen King. In fact, The New Carrie comes out October 18th. And so I thought we would have a Stephen King inspired trivia this week.
Ooh, okay. All right.
So this is kind of a broad question. I want to see how many movies inspired by Stephen King's writing you can come up with.
We going round robin on this?
No, let's group think it. See how many we can get together.
All right. So I got It.
Yep.
Stand By Me.
Sure.
Shawshank Redemption.
Yep. Original Carrie, of course.
Original Carrie. Green Mile.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
We got Pet Sematary.
Mm-hmm.
How about The Langoliers?
You know, that was a made-for-TV miniseries, I believe.
Yeah. But come on, that's a great...
So is The Stand, right?
I did not include those.
The Stand.
Yeah, Under the Dome is going on right now.
Under the Dome.
Dead Zone.
Dead Zone was a movie, Christopher Walken.
Okay.
How about, I had another one. The Shining.
Mm-hmm.
Salem's Lot.
He did something with like killer cars or trucks or something.
He did. Yes, he totally
did. What is that movie called? Oh, it's so bad.
It's a movie? It yeah. wasn't a made yeah. for TV thing?
It was called Maximum Overdrive.
There you go. That's the one.
Yep. The other ones, you can keep thinking, but the other ones I'll give you, Dolores Claiborne.
Okay.
I gotta say, there were so many of them, it was like hard to weed through.
Yeah.
Needful Things, I don't think you said that. Misery.
Oh, Misery, we should have gotten that one.
Yeah. Graveyard Shift.
No.
The Running Man.
How about Thinner? Thinner?
There was two Creepshow movies, and those were based, there were like three short stories kind of all together. That's maybe falls into a gray area. Same with Cat's Eye. Firestarter? Children of the Corn?
Oh, yeah, I forgot that was Stephen King.
Christine?
Thinner Cujo. Was definitely Stephen King.
Cujo, yeah, classic.
Wait, what was Stephen King?
Thinner.
Thank
nice.
You.
Nice. You're awesome. That's all I got.
Quite a few.
He is amazingly prolific.
Yeah.
Seriously, I was like, oh, I'll just go and look under IMDb and see what his writing credits are. There's like 200 things there. I'm like trying to figure out which ones were based on his stories. It was ridiculous.
Wow.
Crazy. All right. Well, Jill, tell us what we have to look forward to in wide release this weekend.
All right. So as I mentioned, on October 18th, this month's surprisingly only big horror release, given that it's Halloween, the remake of Stephen King's Carrie, about a young girl with telekinetic powers who gets bullied a bit too far, and that's rated R.
Are you going to see it in theaters?
I don't think I can. I mean, gosh. There's also Escape Plan, the action thriller starring Sylvester Stallone and Arnold Schwarzenegger, about a man who designs prisons getting wrongfully locked up, also rated R.
And weirdly, and she does want to see that one in theaters.
I know.
So. I do. I totally do.
It's a weird day when I'm going to go see the horror film and you're going to see the Schwarzenegger
film. I'll go see
film.
It alone on my day off.
There you go.
There are some other great movies coming out, but it's not really clear how many screens they're going to hit. So do you want to talk about those, Chris, the limited release?
Sure, I'll take them. I think the one we've been talking about the most is 12 Years a Slave. That's one about a free black man who in 1841 was abducted and forced into slavery. That just took, as we said, top honors at the Toronto Film Festival, and it's probably a lock for a Best Picture nomination. It's rated R. We've also got All Is Lost, starring Robert Redford as that sailor who has an accident out at sea and struggles to survive.
That one's looks great.
Yeah, it does look really interesting. Rated PG-13, has gotten tremendous, tremendous reviews so far.
I'm not surprised.
The last one I've got for you is The Fifth Estate, which is getting very mixed reviews, and that one focuses on Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. That's rated R.
All right, well, let's wrap this thing up with three quickies for you. Jill, George Lucas revealed that the working title in his head for Star Wars Episode 7 are Rise of the Jedi or Return of the Sith. Mm. Are either of those going to stick, do you think?
I mean, short answer, no. the last movie leading up to this is Return of the Jedi. So 30 years later, all of a sudden they're going to rise. It just doesn't make any sense.
Okay, Chris, director Oliver Stone and Jamie Foxx are reportedly in negotiations to make a long-awaited Martin Luther King Jr. biography.
Yeah.
Good picks?
Definitely on the Oliver Stone front. You know, he did JFK back in 1991. He did Nixon in 95. He did W in 2008. Both of those were very well-liked movies. I think he's a strong bet for doing a good, solid picture for Martin Luther King Jr. That said, I would not cast Jamie Foxx for this. He is 45 now. Martin Luther King died when he was 39, and his social justice work really started back when he was 26. He was that age during the Montgomery bus boycotts. So I think I would go with somebody younger. I think Foxx is an odd pick.
You got someone in mind?
Yeah, maybe Michael B. Jordan, I think, would be a good pick for this. He's on the younger side of that, but you could age him up, I think, more easily than you can age Jamie Foxx down.
Gotcha. All right, last one. Foxx, Michael Bay says after Transformers Age of Extinction, he'll be adapting the nonfiction book Sabotage, A Genius Scientist, His Band of Young Commandos, and the Mission to Kill Hitler's Superbomb. Good project for him?
No, besides being the worst title ever, just go see Pearl Harbor if you want to see what he does to World War II history.
Oh, gross.
That's true. Well, that's it for this week's show. As always, we encourage you to subscribe to the Geek Scholars Movie News podcast on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to give us a review and to visit our website, geekscholars.com. Also, check out our brand new channel on YouTube. Just search for Geek Scholars.
We also love hearing from our listeners, so write to us at mail@geekscholars.com or leave us a comment on our Facebook site. We do try to answer every single piece of mail we get, so if you send us something, we'll get back to you as soon as we can. We also encourage all of our listeners to check out EclipseMagazine.com, another great entertainment website, and the music of the 440 Alliance, who graciously allow us to use their songs on our show. Finally, take that feedback survey on our website to help us make the podcast even better than it already is. Until next week, this is Chris.
And Lauren.
And Jill.
And Fox saying, they're not here to fish. Have a good week, everybody. He's believable as a strategist, a strategist, rather. I'm going to do it again. He's believable. Thank you. All of you shut up. Can't go on until you shut up. Wow, that was fast.
It was fast.
Good.
Like Josh Hartnett's career, just here and gone.
If you're going to do Chris's mom, you have to do his sister, too.
Wait. Can you phrase that a little differently?